Okay, we have just a couple of announcements, and then we'll start in a few minutes. We're getting another mic so that you can hear the psaltery. General announcements about the Duff series. Tonight, myself, Jan Garden Castro, reading poetry, Rebecca Boyer playing psaltery, fiddle, and guitar, and Nelson Wu will be reading Cosmic Stories and Earth Connections. Next month, on May 4th, Shirley LaFleur and Robin Mack will be performing with their own bands, and Trig Crawford will be doing the percussion with them. So they're free posters for next month's reading. And there are also free flyers for River Styx magazine if you want to just look briefly and see what the good contents are before you rush and buy a couple of books, then you may do this. And if you're a poet and you want to submit works for either the magazine or for the Duff's Poetry Series, you send the works to the address on the flyer. We'll be selecting primarily new poets for next year's season at Duff's, so we'll be looking for some new voices in the audience. There's a reading by Tom McDonough, who's a novelist, who will be reading commenting on his camera work in Best Boy, an Academy Award-winning documentary, and read from his new novel, Version with Child, on April 24th and 25th at Carlo Auditorium, Tegeler Hall, 3550 Lindell, that's on the St. Louis Shoe campus, and the admission is $3 at the door.
Okay, do you have your mic?
Yes, she's coming.
Okay, as soon as we get the mic in order, we'll begin the evening's program. Now, to just introduce myself a little bit, I've read my poetry kind of widely in the St. Louis area and in Jefferson City, recently at the University of Kentucky, and this summer I'll be reading at in San Francisco at an art center. Among my poetry, I write ballads, histories, stories, and tonight I've selected basically things about human understanding. Dr. Wu is a big humanist, and he's influenced me a lot. And so many of these things are based on myth, and Becky will be accompanying me. I'll start with something just from my journal. This is something you haven't heard. Fame, I see. How helpless you have made this poet. And in your own image, she's a caterpillar about to birth herself, but never in life does body match its mind. Her wings of cerebellum open and close in flight that winds accelerate, reflecting light. I'm taking off the roof to see the moon, so fly off, woodpecker jay, fly off. Let me take the moon closely into my eye to see the gray edge of corolla and stamen. Let me run my eyes into those gray orbs, those named seas from which flow and float the countless petals of my dream, sprung feathers, light waves, unfolding circles of light, shadowed. The face of the moon so close to mine, the two of us staring at each other, our eyelash veils bring me close to the mystery I contain, and, as you predict my power, a single petal of the moon fills with translucent light. Coda. Oh, moon, you are stuck in my eye. Lightning has struck you and I, moon. I'll see you through your changes and pause nightly to appear in you, in my eye. Potatoes grow eyes for you. We are domestics planted here, rooting for a piece of sky. the first solar eclipse was recorded in China in 635 BC. Every time there's a solar eclipse, portentous things happen. Wars end. People go crazy. People die. People live. And I'm projecting what the sun and moon do during the solar eclipse. This was the eclipse of February 16th, 1980, during which Muriel Rukeyser, a New York poet, died. Solar eclipse. What is this shaking of water which makes Phoenix rise, flood its banks after 500 years? What is this 45th solar eclipse darkening the sky in the east? Did you see the light going out of your eyes? I press my nose into your neck, my breasts into your breastbone. My legs weave light into the darkest place. We blow light into each other's eyes. We cover each other with light, light undulations, forgetting that the world has gone out of herself tonight. A poet has died in her skyscraper, just as her star appeared in heaven. She chain-smoked her way up, up past gates of declared woman love, past the politics of sainthood. Her star appeared beyond Bear's configuration on Venus's other side. It will be years before the first scientist discovers and names her light, years before astrologers make a story, a star story, about how she grew. Tonight in heavenly Manhattan, a star has gone up at 65. Retirement in the sky, she'd have said. We become the high school sweethearts we never were, not knowing how to finish the story. We begin a new tale about the meaning behind this act, melting our skins. We are not just performers. This act takes us, is climbing with us, to a place we never visited, are new. Sweeter than any childhood now, cool and endless as fountains of sun again entering the sky, we continue to begin this life. George O'Keefe is a very famous, domineering, and strong-willed artist. And when she's now 94, and this next poem describes an early watercolor painting of hers. It's called O'Keefe's Chicken. What dark bird, formless except for jutting beak, hangs amid dark scenery, legs an afterthought, can't walk out among cube-shaped stars? Who are you with no sound, no walk, no company, no grain to peck and chew? Why is your eye blank? Are these your droppings all over the page, these boxes of light? Do they come out of you like day out of night? Whose chicken are you, laying square eggs that rosy dawn swallows? Grandfather. My grandfather is also 94. And his hair has been silver since he was about 20. And he gets brown when he goes outside. My grandfather is silver and golden like Aztec coins which bring good luck at weddings. Through wrinkling brow, he watches life increasing in me. I watch his sun-baked skin grow loose around his tiger bones. He is the warrior shining in my eyes. Electra has had more myths written about her than any other Greek our heroine. In the Greek myth, when she thought her brother Orestes was dead and she couldn't avenge her mother's murder of her father Agamemnon, she thought she was helpless. This modern Electra has a different problem. Lightning. My fire is going crazy tonight. I'm driving into morning. I want to stop in Electra, Texas, but there's only a stop-and-go store and oil wells and little wood houses. Where is my mansion tucked into the storm's cloud? Will I electrocute myself? I'm so hot inside. False skin, cool to touch, alone on this road north, counting the hours until Texas is past. If I think of you with desire for myself, forgive me. This is a myth about Aphrodite, who is married to Vulcan. He was not only a metalsmith, but an artificer. And he collaborated with the Cyclops to bring a lot of little demons into the world. She said, I'll tell you how they named me. First I wore my virgin skin, and every creepy genius worshipped me, except Vulcan. He'd not answer the door or take me out and hid his pockmarked face behind his hump. He chose the vilest whores to fuck and spewed out molten words when I was near. But I was never innocent, just pure. After some time, he called me. He was enormous, forever smelting words, molding letters, forging burning forms, which came to stand for all that man can make of metal. In his need to create, he tended his own fire, kept it white hot. Me, he forgot. I never knew a man so ugly, so bent over his own fate, that time became a way to mark each monument. I ran away to mountains, where I listened to the night, bathed in coldest waters, slept on grass. Hummingbirds would whirl above rushing falls, and trees told stories about Mars. One day in a meadow above the clouds, he appeared. We talked about past wars, the wars to come, the final war. Vulcan forged, Mars killed. I gave life some new design. So my name comes from the water-filled vessels of plants, their rootedness sown in my endless path. The next poem, Venus to Vulcan, there's an image of the moon after the astronauts had left it and there were only footprints. Husband, your words balance between the dead weight of plutonium and radiant ether. Who married us? Fate, Zeus, your will. When Mars took off with me, his head aflame, my breast cupped in his long, hardened fingers, you cast a forged mesh net around us to bring us down, caged, for public view. Now, open to better instincts, you free that part of me that has always been free, to range among seas and spaces deserted except for footprints. My lips taste my own salt. Husband, your metal monuments to time outlive our love. Okay. This is a sonnet. Love is a rocky rose. Coming with you is poetry's inscription, drawn in a roll of words moving like brushes made of cashmere, unrolling swirls of touch we always talk about, comparing the calligraphed lines and the result. We try to complete each other, and the soft swirl of the tips of 20 fingers and toes and lips, making arcs in the dark light of the eye, relive the mind's experience, the shadowed figures of thought that bend around a point to make it and another's. Oh, I am not sad, I'm bending here alone. Okay, this little poem won a prize. It's called Green River Road. Monet's poplars speak of time experienced in the eye. As these grapes climbing in profusion up pine and chestnut, elm and apple speak of movement. White daisies' small yellow heads send up light perfume from fields near Green River. silver clouds pearl into balls against scarlet sunset. Trees color evenly with dark. Silver blues, rock silver in sudden full moonlight. The Kiss. This takes place in Central Park. Robert Lowell said, "The world is this world, this Ferris wheel." I say, "This world, this zoo." What is it to love? Love in a thousand strings of summer, in this long kiss passing back and forth through a crowded city park. Two lovers stand for this endless meeting of lips, their secrets passing through, gray-haired uniformed nurses wheeling navy blue boys in perambulators through, the sausage man pushing his closed cart away through burdock clover and high grass. The late sun gilds the sloping silvered glass wall of the Met wing. A gum-chewing man, brown suit and hat, rides his bicycle through the kiss, asking out loud, "Is this a zoo? This is me and you." Okay. This is for all those people who like to have one-way conversations in which they are doing the talking. Piggy. Snout sucking a mass of garbage and corn, speckled white body rolled brown in mud. Is it green money you're eating? Is it white money? As you turn to me, your look erases an hour's conversation with a sneer. For the record, I did not transform you. I do not lure men, boys, or ladies, or throw favors like so much corn. When you start labeling, look at yourself. As you snort truffles and vermouth, as you hide in the labels of Scotch clothiers, remember me taking after a bear in the forest, into the berries. You are consuming your reward and your own good name on my time. The Whale. This is about poets like Robert Lowell, who get so deep, so embroiled in poetry that they almost lose sight of the shore. Guess you have to. The Whale. Reading between the lines, I look into your face, scarred with beauty. There's no grave you have not visited, and this leaves you a touch above us. Memories emanate from your shadow crossing earth. Your rabbit eyes dart to catch words dropping from cloud banks. I feel rice reach my belly, and there is a world you could have opened to me, or two. But you live in the deeps. Dark food inside your mouth remains undigested. Your tail disappearing in water, murk rolls back to the shore. Archaic statue of an inventor. There is a word for the energy light gives off, ohms, and for its intensity, watts. But these can't measure you. There's a steely shadow of your large frame, a dark obelisk to which you have become attached. The mechanism of your mind and movements is finally set. You work to surprise, to delight yourself, to invent a life that offers you kindly all you deserve. And your chiseled features, no eyes for the world, a model of proportion and line, take us back in time. Yes, you were bloodless. Okay. The Park. After a Mime by Bert and Sophie. Walking in place, stop. Drink water, stop. Turn head, stop. Man moving, stop. Change to chase, stop. Run, boat, stop. Girl, silent. Man, silent. Music starts, beat speeds up. Drums and shaker, she's down. One, take her flower. Two, smell it. Three, toss it aside. Four, back off. There's this man who some of you might have heard of who writes, who was a composer, musician, and he's served about 10 years in jail for rape. And so one day he sent me a letter with bloody fingerprints on it, and I wrote this poem. Former rapist, now framed. Perhaps the love that grows in dungeons breathes in the bloody fingers you press against the page. You rage that you love that beyond the bars and solitude of fingerprints. You learn from rape, you say. Composer, your blood marks the bars that measure your last age. Moons circle your head and blow out for another year, all light. Okay, this poem has three references which might be recognizable. Wallace Stevens used to write about ideal beauty, Susanna and the elders. Dr. Wu has a story about a little boy in a boat finding his own center. And then my own little boy once brought home when he was five, brought home a kind of a gouache of boats lost at sea. So all three of those are kind of in the poem. Darkness itself. There is a corridor of wind outside the music chamber, soft violins amplified in night. An extended crack in the sloping ceiling, my eye follows the trail left by your eyes watching Susanna. Why buy a pear in winter? Even sun cannot ripen what is out of season. You are so giving of the outward signs. On this unseasonable day, so hot, turning cold, the breath of love unfolding has turned green. And the boats lost at sea, painted by my little boy, are too deep a thought for me. His ever-expanding metaphor, folded and starred, floats on colored water. One red boat forms its own center as the perimeter dims. This is a poem about the petroglyphs in Washington State Park in Washington, Missouri. They're just beautiful. And they're really a string of fertility images. So here I've taken one and done something with it. I have neither words nor breath nor time. Your raw silk when I touch you as the thunderbird blowing out clouds dissolves into original light. His face looms larger and larger, his nose landing on North America, blowing the people off in one exhalation. Rivers, rivers run down his cheeks. His lightning bolt heartbeats are carried off by birds. Our wrists are joined in the rain. This is after a Franz Kline painting at the Chicago Art Institute, Malanga. Someone has torn the world into strips and stares at them in darkness. This is called the Neutron Bomb. It's for all those good people who want a new chemical bomb that will kill just people and not destroy property. And it mentions Fritz Lang's film Metropolis and D.W. Griffith's film Intolerance, which are just beautiful films of the 1920s that you should see, which forecast actually the ending of the world. The Neutron Bomb. War made drunk the bowl of time. People, as they worked and slept, slept on. No one was fit to bury the dead. The buildings ticked on. Poison tears fell from the sky. Tears burned the cheeks of survivors. Metropolis fell, Fritz, and your film saw the paradise that we missed, or saw as fiction with Griffith's Towers of Babel. Intolerance has one more epic now. No one sings catalog arias among human rubble, a silent eve with no genes to pass on. Hag of the Mountains is part myth and partly based on my travels in Asia. The original hag was in a Kurino play called Yamamba by Ziyama Motokiyo, who lived from 1363 to 1443. In the Japanese play, a white-haired mountain spirit wanders endlessly through the six Buddhist worlds of existence. In this poem, the hag is both young and old, and she travels from Istanbul across Asia to Darjeeling, and Hag of the Mountains. Is there anything outside the law? It plays and sports and dances, I hear. Miyake. This song, as I climb over the mountains, turning winter into spring, Istanbul. In the city of Mas Sophia, rain fills your ageless eye. Squatting among stones in the courtyard, I patch my sack and rebind my cold feet with printed rags. The silk shirt next to my skin is so worn the threads hug each other. My dress is a dark tapestry. No one can read the old letters curling down the front like a banner. Yet elfin vendors, street-worn black eyes, trace the lines. I eat no meat, rice and dal served on a leaf. And your golden shadow, wind and rain, we find a cave of steaming pipes. Here's my breast to kiss. Do you see the circle rising to meet your sweet words? A boy leads me to Pierre Loti, the crumbling village, hillside graves, watching the sea. The poet's words rise unspoken, hold us bird-like at his dark window, coming to the Black Sea. Walking for 13 days, red clay, brown dung molded into fields, houses, fuel. In these Caucasian boot heels, black as night's blood, I bury this black heart. Woman, plowing your tongue into earth, I bring paper to transform your elements to lines. You steer the wooden plow through deep mud and stir another element in your timeless wake. Tehran, I need this bright plastic to mend my sack. I will give you a Turkish hair jewel. Hear the silver-faced coins jingle from ribbons woven of silver threads. Herat, you offer me these pungent leaves, the green of fields that wake you at dawn. I bring you the locks you carve, the opium you bury, the fragrant memories you inter in tombs and palaces. Kabul, if you insist on washing my feet, bringing me flatbread, I also insist and press two kisses into palm and groin. Remember when you are old that a kiss given in love is young forever. Kashmir. Mountains fall sheer below the expanding eye, narrow paths strewn with dark workmen hewing out the road, spiraling up the spine toward the ancient dream kingdom where olive-skinned mud-cake children ply trades in peanuts and curries along Dal Lake. For pennies I am taken on, cookbook partitioned like a nautilus's shell, with 10 already sleeping along its hull. The wooden shell is on the lake we drink from and return to these waters. I soon depart for Ladakh. Among towers of wrinkled granite, my bones scale mountain bones and learn to speak to God. The Creator turns over all with one mind. I warm myself with snow. Nepal. These Sherpas travel far without tiring. We must be crossing clouds higher than the phoenix. Tonight we celebrate the summer moon, light incense, and dance far above metal Buddhas and stone stupas guarding the city. Darjeeling, flowers sing color as we wind through the jungle, breathing its lush down my back, racing through tea leaves into divine blue clouds. Change me to bird, love. Can my new wings bear me if I discard everything? My sack has been long empty. My feet no longer need coverings. I've never found it so easy to wander, to speak the tongues and silence of the ritual born. They name me Padma, bring seeds from mountains. Tomorrow I will go further along the spine, and when I return to you, cast scattering my ages in the wind, I will sing the songs of the climb and lend my burnished bones to the sky. Okay, I think I'll close with Beginning is the End. Okay, this is not a poem about lovers. It's my take of Michelangelo's version of creation, where you've got the two hands. And my reading is that they're just parting. Beginning is the end. You take my hand. We're the original makers of love, the pulse and heart of skin stretched taut around the globe, skin variously humped with cities made and unmade by humans, mountains and rivers which feed each other, forests so thick with trees they make their own rain. Together we compose the world. God knows where this skin of ours stretches, or if the message in our blood unites us the instant before our fingers draw apart. Okay, thank you very much. I just want to say about Becky Boyer, for those of you who don't know her, she's an accomplished musician. She plays with the Orchestra of St. Louis, and last summer was assistant concertmaster for the Junior Philharmonic in Colorado. She's won many musical honors, and she also plays at folk festivals all along the East Coast. And so she's schooled in both classical and folk tradition. She comes from four generations of Irish fiddlers.